This is a continuation of The Monkey Who Wouldn't Kill by Henry Drummond. This recording is provided by the Christian Classics Ethereal Library and read by Rene Lacroix of Woodstock, Ontario, Canada. For more information or to volunteer, please visit us at ccel.org. Gum, Chapter 6. Two nights after the wheel of fortune gave an unlooked-for turn, Donald's wife was so proud of the nugget that she could not keep the news to herself. And next morning, although Donald had carefully told her to keep it quiet, confided his good luck to another miner's wife who lived a few hundred yards off. This worthy woman told another, and in 24 hours the fame of Donald's nugget was spread from end to end of the valley. This would not have mattered in most places, but mining districts are peopled by criminals and adventurers of all kinds, and among these were some lawless characters whose chief business was to get gold in some other way than by working for it. Two of these men, brothers, who lived with their families at the lower end of the valley, determined that they should possess themselves of Donald's nugget. Covering their faces with black masks and armed with revolvers, they set off about midnight for the miner's cabin. The family were fast asleep, and the robbers noiselessly pushed up the window and entered the room where Donald slept. Pointing a loaded revolver at his head, one of the men roughly awoke him and told him if he moved or cried out, he would blow out his brains and murder everyone in the house. Donald was too familiar with stories of camp crime to resist an attack so sudden, and though a loaded revolver was under his own pillow, he saw his disadvantage, and for the sake of his wife and children, controlled himself with great effort. "I want that little bit of metal of yours," said the robber. Donald lay perfectly quiet. "Do you hear?" exclaimed the man. "I want that gold." "Then you won't get it," said Donald quietly. "I believe he has sent it to the bank," whispered the other man. "Kill him if he has." "Look here," thundered the first. "Do you mean to say that nugget is gone?" Donald made no reply. If he said it was gone, the robbers would simply have sneaked home, for Donald was known in these parts as a man who never told a lie. Once more the robber asked him, but Donald remained silent. This was enough. If it had really been gone, Donald would certainly have said so. So, while the first man stood with a revolver at his ear, the second proceeded to search the house. Drawers, boxes, and cupboards were open and ransacked in quick succession. Every corner of the two rooms was examined. The very dishes on the shelf were turned upside down, and the sugar basin smashed to pieces with a blow, in case it should have been hidden there. "Let me try," said the man with the revolver. "You watch the old bear, and see if I can't find it." Once more the house was ransacked from top to bottom, and the robber was about to abandon the search when a sudden thought occurred to him. On the mantelpiece ticked a wooden American clock, about 2 feet high. The man opened the door in the case and fumbled about with his finger. Next moment he had drawn out the nugget. He bent over the fire to get a better look at it, and then proceeded to weigh it in the palm of his hand to see how much it was worth. The other robber, unable to restrain his curiosity, moved likewise toward the fire, when the first checked him with an angry cry and sent him back to the victim's side to continue his guard. Another moment and Donald would have had his revolver out, and the nugget would have been saved. But there was another spectator of this scene on whom the thieves had scarcely reckoned. In his usual berth, crouched at the side of the fireplace, sat Gum. The robber was weighing the gold in his hand, turning it round and round and gloating over it, when the glitter from the precious metal attracted the monkey's eye. It seemed to feel some sense of property in this gold, for quick as lightning one hairy paw brushed the robber's hand, and the next moment the nugget was gone. With a great oath, the robber turned on Gum, and dealt it a blow on the head which knocked it senseless to the other side of the room. But before that blow fell, two things happened. With one hand held out to protect itself against the sudden onslaught, the monkey made a grab at its assailant's face and tore off the black mask, so that Donald instantly recognized the man in the glow of the firelight. With the other hand, which held the gold, the monkey swiftly transferred the nugget to its mouth. The robber's eye followed this last movement, however, and he picked up gum roughly and proceeded to wrench open its jaws. He felt all around his mouth, but the nugget was not there. He held the senseless body up by the tail and shook it, but no gold appeared. He took his head between his knees and sounded all over its throat, but the nugget was not to be found. As a matter of fact, it was not there. The blow which had fallen upon the monkey's head had knocked it down its throat. Gum had swallowed the nugget. What was to be done now? If the robber had had a knife in his pocket, Gum would have been a dead monkey in 2 seconds. But while he was unsuccessfully feeling for his knife, Gum suddenly came to, and with one violent wriggle shook itself free and sprang on the highest shelf. The robber gave chase. Then followed the most comical hunt you ever saw. The robber's face being now exposed, he had no idea that Donald had already recognized him. He was afraid to turn round, and he had to keep up the hunt without once facing the direction where Donald lay, with the result that he was fairly baffled, and after a quarter of an hour's hard work, gave up the chase. All that remained now was to blind Donald. Roughly approaching the bed, the robber drew the blankets over Donald's face and told him he would shoot him if he dared to stir. As an extra precaution, the miner's revolver was taken out of reach, and then both men started with a piece of rope to secure the monkey. Clever as Gum was, he was scarcely a match for two men, who, as noted horse thieves, were experts with the lasso, and in a short time the monkey was ignominiously driven from his perch on a rafter, tied up in Donald's pillowcase, and swung over the shoulder of one of the men. Then the robbers wished Donald a grim good night and marched off with their purse. As they were going out the door, Donald called after them, "Good night, ye blackguards, and mark my words, if ye lay a hand on that monkey, you'll regret it as long as ye live." This made the men a little frightened, for although they did not like to confess it to one another, there was something about Gum that was not canny. Anyhow, whether it was fear of the monkey or of their own consciences, instead of killing Gum as soon as they left the house, they carried it all the way home with them, discussing which of them was to kill it, and how it was to be done. Chapter 7. When the thieves reached home, after a hasty breakfast, they continued the discussion as to how the purse was to be opened and the nugget secured. Unfortunately for them, the monkey had struggled out of the pillowcase as soon as it reached the house, and the robber's children at once seized upon it and claimed it as their pet. When they were told it would have to be killed, the youngest child, a little girl so lovely that even a bad father could not help loving her, burst into tears, and putting her arms around the robber's neck, prayed and entreated him to spare its life and let her play with it. Now, wicked as this man was, this child had a mysterious influence over him, and though he was resolved to kill Gum, and that immediately, he determined that she should not see it done, nor even know that he had done it. Besides this, it would never do to let the people in the valley know that they had killed the monkey, for Donald would surely go in search of it. So after consulting together for some time, the robbers decided on a plan for killing Gum without anybody being the wiser. They knew that if they shot it, or drowned it, or slew it with a knife, the children would be angry, and the story would certainly be told to their playmates and passed on in time to Donald's family. So a very diabolical scheme was hatched. The only way they could think of for killing Gum without anyone seeing, or without either of them being actually present at the death, was to blow it up with gunpowder. This method had another advantage, which neither of the men liked to confess weighed with them, but in reality it was this more than anything else that made them think of the gunpowder. At the bottom of their hearts these men were cowards, and after the strange threat Donald had uttered as they were leaving his house, they were secretly afraid to lay hand upon Gum. A monkey was a very mysterious creature. They had never had anything to do with one before. Gum's face had a curious human look, and to murder it in cold blood was almost like murdering a man. So the gunpowder idea seemed the very solution that was needed, and they set about their preparations at once. While one of the men remained at the kitchen fire with the family to allay suspicion, the other, after pocketing a little can of miner's blasting powder, 2 feet of fuse, and a piece of string, strolled out to the wood behind the cabin on the pretense of giving the monkey a walk. As soon as a low thicket screened the pair from view, the robber tied the monkey to the trunk of a tree. Then he lashed the can of gunpowder tightly to the monkey's tail, passed one end of the fuse into it through a small hole, struck a match, and lighted the other end. As soon as he saw the fuse was fairly lit, and the red fire slowly creeping upwards, he ran back as fast as he could to the house. Meantime, the other man had got a concertina from the shelf, and was playing with all his might to drown the sound of the explosion. When the executioner arrived, out of breath though he was, he joined noisily in the dance which the children had set up the moment the concertina began to play, and presently such a stamping and shouting was going on in the cottage that the sound of an earthquake would have been quenched. Suddenly an awful interruption occurred. Through the open door the monkey bounded in, and taking up its place in the midst of the circle, joined in the dance. From its neck dangled a piece of string burned at the point, but what made the children shriek with laughter was a small tin can tied to its tail, which clattered about with every turn of the body, and, strange to say, had a sort of little tail of its own which appeared to be on fire, for little puffs of smoke were coming from it, and the red color glowed at the tip. The moment the robbers caught sight of this apparition, there was a yell of fear which paralyzed the children into rigid statues. The men's faces were livid with terror, and some seconds passed before either had recovered his senses sufficiently to act. Then one man, with a great sweep of his arm, caught up all the children into one tumbled bunch and flung them screaming with pain and surprise under the bed of the adjoining room. The other, who was directly responsible for the mischief, seeing that the only chance to save his house and himself was to get gum outside, clutched the smoking monkey in his arms and rushed to the door. Quick as the movement was, it was not quick enough. Those inside heard the deafening report. The house was filled with smoke. The doorway became a heap of fallen timber, and the blackened body of a man lay groaning among the charred ruins. One of the robbers, their wives, and all the children were safe. But when the smoke cleared away, and the body by the door was examined, life was all but extinct. For weeks the robber hung between life and death. It forms no part of the story to tell what pains he suffered, or what agonies of mind he passed through, or how, when once after he was able to crawl from his bed and go out into the air, it was to see never more the sunlight or the flowers with his sightless eyes. Certainly Donald's words had come true. When the miner heard that evening what had happened, although he had already sent off word to the nearest police station with the names of the guilty men, he took no further action in the matter. God's punishment was quicker than man's. Chapter 8. Late that afternoon, the monkey turned up at his old home. Donald found him lying at the door, an almost unrecognizable object. Thanks to the way the robber had carried him, one half of his body was untouched, but the other half was a pitiable spectacle, and the long curly tail, gum's great ornament and plaything, was blown off by the root. The poor creature had swooned, but that he had lain there an hour or two in great pain was plain from the way the gravel was tossed about in all directions round him. Donald was greatly touched, and lifting him up in his arms as tenderly as if he were a child, placed him in his own bed and dressed his burns. After a long sleep, it awoke, and Donald, who had sat silently by his side, bent over to allow it to lick his face. The moment it opened its mouth, the miner sprang from his chair as if he had been shot, for there, between his teeth, the monkey held the nugget. 5 years have passed. Donald is the richest man in Silver Creek County, and his great mines are worked by hundreds of men. He lives in a great house, sumptuously furnished and full of precious things, which he delights to show to the many visitors who flock to see his mine. But of all these precious things, by far the most precious is gum, the monkey without a tail, the finder of his first nugget, and the founder of his fortunes, as he says to everybody. Then he tells how gum found the nugget, and how it was stolen, and once more brought back, and how when gum got better, the two went back to the spot where the big lump was found, and searched, and found lump after lump, and nugget after nugget, until in a few months more gold was hidden below Donald's bed than had come from all the mines put together since they first were opened. Then the good man calls out a word in Gaelic, and the monkey without a tail jumps into his arms to be caressed, and Donald asks his guest to read the inscription on the golden collar round its neck. To Faithful Gum, from his grateful master. Made out of the first nugget. August the 2nd, 1888. End of Chapter 8. And end of The Monkey Who Wouldn't Kill by Henry Drummond. Read by Renee Lacroix, Woodstock, Ontario, Canada.